bubblegum.
Oh yeah.
HR, Brian, William, and Nisha on every day talking about HR with the people that are getting it done out there. And I'll be honest, I like hearing the cure. That puts me in a good place to talk to people every single day. So let's get to our guest because he's got some excellent things to share. First time on the show, Chip Lumen, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you very much, and you know, I love The Cure too. Seen them about, I don't know, 8 or 9 times, but I have to say that's the one song that I don't like by The Cure.
I don't actually remember seeing The Cure 8 or 9 times. I'm pretty sure I bought tickets. I don't know, a different chapter of my life, but I'm pretty sure I was at a few concerts.
There you go.
So that's one of my favorite songs. So see, we're all getting along. It's a big virtual hug right now. Well, if you would, let's kick it off and introduce yourself to our millions of listeners, and then we'll roll into what's top of mind for you.
Well, thanks. So I'm Chip Lumen. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at HireVue, one of the original founding members of the team, employee number 3. Been here for a handful of years now. It's a lot. But past life, been an HR professional at several large organizations, Charles Schwab, Pepsi, Marathon Oil. Took a little time, did some video game development in there as well, ran a video game studio. So a guy who likes HR and likes technology.
Nice. Take us into what's top of mind for you these days. What's kind of keeping you up at night?
Well, I think one of the biggest things and the challenges what I'm responsible for here is helping our clients be successful, and our clients are our talent acquisition and HR professionals that have bought our software. When I was back in HR, I ran HR shared services. I did a lot of technology deployments, so I've got a lot of experience on what it takes to successfully bring something to an organization. And what keeps me up is a blog post I wrote earlier this week is our profession's lack of courage when it comes to bringing something new to an organization. I get a lot of people that try before they buy, but unfortunately they keep trying. They keep doing pilots. They never really commit. And it's really helping people learn that their job's to bring change and drive, you know, successful new innovative things in their organization. Sometimes it's concerning to see that lack of courage with HR professionals. I was trained at Pepsi to lead change in an organization, the old head, heart, and hands model, and I was taught that was part of my job in HR was to lead change, and I'm just not seeing it out there as broadly as I think it should be.
How much of this relates to fear and or the relationship that HR has with the rest of the organization, the other executives?
You know, I think that's a I think that has a lot to do with it, and I think it has to do with credibility and bringing that business knowledge and understanding to the conversation. I recently was speaking, and I asked everybody, how many of you use Concur to file your T&E, you know, when you return from this conference? And half the room raised their hand, and I said, how many of your CFOs told you that if you didn't like the product, you could still send in an Excel spreadsheet and receipts and do your expense filing that way? And they all laughed. But a lot of HR people do that. They're afraid to stand up and say, look, I've got the answer. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, I've researched this. I've done just like you did, went out and figured out what was the best solution, and I brought it in. But I think it's that, to your point, fear of stepping over the line and taking the chance.
It's funny. Years ago, someone told me, listen, you're either afraid of success, you have a fear of success, you have a fear of failure. And first of all, I don't know if that's technically true, but I remember this conversation. Do you believe that in your heart of hearts, after working in HR for so long, and now your customers are HR in a lot of cases, do you think that they have a fear of success or a fear of failure?
I think it's probably the fear of failure. And I think part of it is this dual hat that HR continues to try and wear. In one part, you know, your compliance, right? You got to follow all the regulations and the rules and make sure the organization's, you know, not taking on more risk than it should. And then the other hat is, I'm going to be innovative. I'm going to be the person to help with talent and help drive the organization in a new place. And I want to be innovative. And, you know, you look at finance, or you look at the CFO's organization, you have accounting and finance, and you really clearly split those things because it's the same approach. And oftentimes HR tries to wear both hats, and I think it's hard. And I think you got to pick which hat you're going to wear, and we need those people in both places, right? I need someone in benefits that's making sure we're following HIPAA regulations and all of the insurance regs, et cetera, et cetera. But I need a talent professional who's out there willing to push the organization to help get the right people there to drive business results and help the company really grow.
You know, I think it's really the fear of the unknown. I think, you know, from a behavioral standpoint and just knowing lots and lots, just like you guys, lots of HR practitioners and professionals and being in the space, I just think it is a paralyzing fear of the unknown on what's going to happen, whether it's success or failure, either or.
Well, and I think HR people, sometimes when they fail, get more grief. So that risk-taking is kind of beaten out of them, so that when they come to the line with a solution and they're going to put it forward, if it doesn't work, it's like, yeah, HR brought me that. But again, it comes back to credibility. You know, and what have you done and what's your track record? And I guess if you bring a lot of bad things, then you probably shouldn't be allowed to bring the next solution to the table.
It's funny, Chip. I coach and counsel a lot of CEOs, and a lot of it's around marketing and adoption and different types of topics. But whenever I talk to them about marketing, I always say, listen, marketing is art and science. You know, anyone who believes it's all art is a liar, and anyone who believes it's all science is a liar. It's knowing that there is a balance between the two, and there's a lot of experimentation. In fact, I always counsel CEOs, imagine your HR department with lab coats on. Like, everyone in marketing has lab coats on, and they're trying things. Some's going to work, some's not going to work, but they're trying things. So with that as a backdrop, how much of that should be the way that we run HR departments?
Well, I think that's a great analogy and a great way to look at it because, again, innovation, entrepreneurialism. I mean, I'm loving working at a small company, and you know, we're over 100 people now, but we were at 3 because you get the opportunity to do just that, experiment and try. Fail fast, right, but see what works and keep moving forward. And oftentimes, and it's probably not even just a function of the HR group. Like you said, it's the CEO. The bigger the organization gets, the harder it is to innovate. And the harder it is for people to take those risks because, again, you've got a quarter, you got public numbers to hit, you got budgets to manage, and you know the person that tends to be out of the box, pushing the rules, questioning authority, they don't often get kind of elevated where they should be to push the organization to where it needs to go. So I think I agree with you that we need more of that. It's okay to fail and fail fast. But we need people that are going to try new things.
Nice. Hey, you know what? Well, we could spend all day talking about this, but I definitely want to get your take on the state of the nation in terms of digital interviewing and that space that y'all occupy, because years ago, y'all were one of the pioneers. You're like one of only 2 or 3 that were in the market. Now there, and thankfully, there's a lot of great providers doing great work. What's your take on kind of how the market's evolved, how the buyer has evolved, et cetera?
Well, it's actually pretty exciting because I would say in the last 12 months, the dialogue has changed from what is this, you know, what are you talking about, how do I use it in my business processes to, you know, how do I get some, right? I kind of understand it. I got a good feeling for it. I want to learn more. So that's been exciting. And as I talk to our competitors and the folks in the space, we are all feeling kind of that shift, which to me is exciting because that means that the transformation that we talked about a few years ago has happened in organizations, and people are seeing that and wanting to figure out how they can bring that to their, talent process.
What's the biggest roadblock to change? So you take on something like a HireVue. What do people have to change? Is it mindset? Is it process? Is it integrating with other applications? Like, what is that? And it's not a single roadblock. I totally get that. But where do you typically start?
Oh yeah, it's all of the above. I think the first thing is that taking that step back and understanding how you can change your process, and that it's not just having a video conference with a candidate. Right, that's where everybody started. Was, oh great, now I can communicate via video. Almost all of the providers have the recorded function where you're collecting content and building content, and that's really to take a step back and think about this in a different way. Even a couple of years ago, it was simply using that on demand where people can log in and take an interview when it's convenient to them. Recruiters would go through their resume sort, however they get lists of names out of their applicant tracking system, and say, well, here are the first 30 people I'm going to call. And they'd say, oh, instead of that, I'm going to send them this link to do a video interview. Well, the big shift is where we've seen most success with our clients is I'm going to have them apply, and back to the applicant tracking system, if I'm using pre-screening questions, knockout questions to take care of some of that initial, are you eligible to work in the U.S.? Do you have the minimum number of years of experience, et cetera? They pass that, they automatically get the link to take the video interview. And that's the big shift, and it's getting people to think about that, because that on-demand interview is actually a structured interview and as close as you can get to an assessment in an interview as you can, because everybody gets the same questions, right? And if you've got great, validated question content, you're now getting, 1,000 people answering the same questions. And on the back end as an assessment team, you're really getting a better assessment, and we're seeing better quality. And now you've eliminated all that scheduling time, and not even I think I'll send them an on-demand, but the content's there. And if you do your resume certain you don't want to talk to them, well, you don't watch the content, just like you wouldn't look at the assessment scores, you wouldn't do the other pieces of the process. But all candidates now get a richer experience. They actually get to engage with the organization, share their story, where in the past they shared an application, right? And so that right there is kind of the biggest thing to help people understand. And once they get it, well, then they go wild with it, right? Then they all of a sudden see, wow, this is the transformational piece of this process. But then there's still where we started. There's those folks that are, okay, I got great numbers, I got great business results. How do I get more sponsorship, or how can I go ask for the dollars to expand my pilot? And, of course, we have a customer success team that helps them do that, because it's in all of our best interest, because, again, we're helping them do their job better and bring great results to their organization. But it's helping them get over that hump of making that big pitch and taking it to the broader organization.
One of my frustrations in hiring used to be how, especially if you interviewed a candidate and you had a success, a series of people interviewing the same candidates, how everyone would see something different in a candidate, and it was really hard to reconcile the story. Bob's in the conference room, and you interview him, then Ted interviews him, Sarah interviews him, Nancy interviews him. You circle up later on, maybe that day, maybe a couple weeks later, whatever. And it's like everyone has a different story about Bob, and it was that reconciliation of all of those different stories. How does HireVue interact with all of that?
Well, that again is kind of the power of having all of this content recorded and building up a database. Now you got a virtual panel interview. Exactly what you just did there. You originally were supposed to, get five or six people in a room and all of you watch the candidate and then go back and talk about them, right? And you do it sequentially like you did. You never know who's asking what questions. Did Jim talk to Bob about the football game for 45 minutes and then ask one question about the actual job, right? Well, now, and we have clients who do this, you'll get the four or five people in a room, rewatch that live interview that somebody did, and have the dialogue right there, right? You get that rich, real-time conversation on a piece of content, or you share it with 20 people if you so desire. But that's another kind of one of those transformational benefits of doing the digital interview process is anybody can watch it, and anybody can provide feedback, and you bring much more subjectivity to what you just described, which is a much more objective, I'm sorry, reverse that, much more objectivity than what you described, the subjective process of a bunch of people talking over 8 hours to someone.
I get those things mixed up as well. Let me ask you about biases and compliance. So while I was studying for the SPHR, I learned all of, you know, the 18 different ways that one can be biased, and I've been guilty of all of them, so I felt kind of good about that on some level. But I want to know about how you actually help us manage interviewing biases, and I know HR and recruiting listening to this, they're going to wonder about how you manage compliance as well.
Well, you know, that's this tool actually helps drive those things. And a couple of things. I'm going to talk about the HireVue Certified Recruiter program that we're rolling out here pretty soon that will be some training around bias. But, again, if you start at this process of everybody's answering the same questions, you know, that's one of the things that the EEOC really pushes on, is everybody getting a fair and consistent process. So on the front end, comparing against job descriptions and job skills and good questions, you're driving out the variances on interview bias, where somebody may ask questions differently, may not ask all of the questions. Inside of our tool, when you go back to review candidates, we randomize the order, so you eliminate order bias, right? A really good retained search executive will know how to present candidates and play to the biases of the person on the other end. It's called bookending. I'll give you that really great candidate that you can't afford who's got those great skills. And then on the other end, that person who's like, okay. And in the middle is the person I want you to have, right? And they know how to present that and play to your biases. We randomize order. You get the opportunity, again, to have multiple people review. You know, there's all of these things that digital interviewing actually drives a more compliant process, because you're taking those things that can happen that we all learned about, you know, out of the process as much as you can. And just the simple fact of you then being able to say, hey, look, there might have been some bias in your evaluation, manager. You and I can sit down, watch the interview, and see where those differences and dialogue about it. And right now, you know, when the door closes, you don't know what happens to that interview. And somebody comes back and claims XYZ happened. Well, with digital, you've got the ability to then proactively find that, go to that manager, train, discipline, possibly terminate if it were that egregious. But you really get that control back in the process that you don't have when you've got people on the phone and in meeting rooms all over the company. So back to the certified recruiter, we're going to roll out for our clients a program that's based on several different IO psychologists' work. We bought Wexley and Silverman's training that they've been doing for the last 30 years, and those guys identified HALO and comparison error back in the 70s. They're PSYOP fellows. Start to get into all that IO psychologist good stuff. But we took the things that they learned. We've taken some newer items around bias and developed a program that our clients can use to learn and be aware of those things in case they haven't taken their SPHR, or in case it's been 20 years since they took the course on it in school, just to refresh and learn and be aware of the things that you need to be aware of.
Nice. And I'm going to do a quick reset, everybody. You are listening to Drive Through HR. We're on with Chip from HireVue, and great conversation. I love the fact that, because I don't think you hear that enough, about bringing in the scientist component of it relative to technology and marrying that up. So that's very good to hear that. So kind of to go keep down the same kind of same stream of thought, how does user experience play into, you know, the video component and maybe gamification? How does that play into being a better process?
Well, so, you know, again, I mentioned I'd made video games for a little while, Acclaim Entertainment, Legends of Wrestling, which is a great game. We take the user experience very seriously here. We actually have several user design and user experience folks on our, you know, product team. And, you know, at the very, you know, simplest piece is we don't want technology to get in the way of the actual activity that's happening, right? So how do we make it easy for all participants to engage in the product and have a good experience? So we've automated as much as we can around the testing of your webcam and audio, and does that stuff work? But as an added bonus, we have 24/7 service. It's been something that, you know, when Mark first founded the company several years ago, he looked at an interview as a potential life-changing experience. right? And everything we do needs to take that kind of respect into the equation of somebody's life could change for the better if they get this job. So we've got 24/7 service in multiple languages for anybody who's participating, hiring manager, recruiter, candidate, et cetera, to be there when they might need help if they're having an issue, because we all know drivers on computers and browsers and all those things are always changing, right? So that part's really important. The gamification piece, you know, we've thought through and we've got some things we do for recruiters. We celebrate, you know, back to the change management side of things. They get all kind of cool HireVue tchotchkes. If you've seen the HireVue slippers out there, we got this small collection of photos from our recruiters. They do a certain amount of interviews and XYZ, they get the HireVue slippers. And so they'll kick up at home and put the slippers up in front of their screen while they're reviewing a candidate to kind of show that experience. But we do some things on our user side to really engage and celebrate their success. Again, to help with that change management and getting people excited about, you know, what's happening on the job for them and how it's changing their life for the better from, you know, a workflow process.
Chip, what's the real uptick, or, you know, from a candidate's perspective, what if I'm accustomed to the on per, like I really show well in person, maybe I'm intimidated by video, maybe I don't have a webcam, etc. So on one level, I want to ask the question around what are the barriers for candidates, and then the opposite of that is where does it help candidates that it wouldn't normally help them, you know, if they had to do an in-person, stand-in-line type of interview?
Sure. Barriers are gone. We ship a few webcams anymore, and that's because we have clients who bought them and said we want to use them in the past. But now that we're on iOS and Android and mobile, you know, tablets, you know, people can really find it anywhere. Our support team, if you call in and I don't have a camera, they help you with the first question of, do you have a friend? That's usually the quickest way to find one. But if not, we get them to a library or somewhere that they can do it. That's really, that barrier's gone. You know, 3-4 years ago, it was real. I mean, we had to ship a webcam to almost everybody, right? On the candidate experience, what we do is we work with our clients to really set up the WIFM, right? What's in it for the candidate? There's a great journal article out there in Employee Relations Today that we had someone do some research with our customers around a couple of things. If you share with them that, A, you're going to get the same questions as everybody else, and B, multiple people can watch that content so you don't have to have that 6 or 7 hour day of people asking you questions. Candidates love it. We do a net promoter score for our users, our recruiters, and our candidates, and the candidate score has been anywhere in the 40 to 50 range, which if you know net promoter, that's extremely high. And we have had over 18,000 candidates respond. So they love the process when they understand those pieces, right, that you're going to respect their time. Because ultimately when the company comes back, they've spent enough time that the dialogue is richer, the company's interested. And from a workflow perspective, you can start moving away from assessment as a company because you've done that and moved to closing, right? And how do you get the candidate excited about joining the company? So the time you're spending in person with them is much richer, much more valuable, and really the company's pursuing at that point, not assessing.
You did a lot of great work as a practitioner. What do you you work for a wonderful technology company, obviously, but what do you miss about being on the practitioner side?
Do I have to come up with something? No. I think that for me, the looking back at all the places, and I've been, you know, generalist in all kind of specialist roles, but for me it's about talent. And the fun part of being in HR is being the person who owns the talent in the organization, and that's organizational design, right? How do you put groups of people together? How do you reorganize divisions to be effective at driving the outcomes that the company's going after, right? Better product, better client experience for your clients, et cetera. Really the talent piece. For me, that's been the most fun over all these years is getting great people into the organization and then taking those great people and helping them do, you know, even greater things.
Nice. And I have to ask you about business in Utah. How is it different than anywhere else in the United States?
Well, I've lived all over the country. I'm a Western New Yorker by trade, and the great news is there's a couple of Western New Yorkers who have a wing shop here in Utah, so that's what keeps me happy here. I think that Utah's got this long history of technology innovation. You know, I ran the video game studio here. There's been this long, rich history of video games here and just a lot of technology startups. And I think that's kind of it's a hotbed for innovation and kind of starting things from scratch. And really over the last 10 to 15 years, that's expanded. And that's what's pretty exciting. And you know, we're able to get good talent from around here that's had that experience growing companies.
Well, Chip, let me ask you, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show. Where are you going this year? What conferences are really interesting to you for the rest of 2013?
Well, so I'm going to be at the Recruiting Innovation Summit in a couple of weeks in San Francisco. Just got signed up to do HR Tech Europe, which we've done that show now a couple times. This is my first time going over to do HR Tech Europe. I'll definitely be at HR Tech in the fall. You know, when I was at Schwab and had all of the HR technology underneath me, that was my favorite show to learn about what was new and cool out there. And I think this will be my 11th one in a row. Just one of my favorite shows from a tech perspective. I think we've got some. I'll be at HCI. I'll be out and about and all over the place. So love to connect with folks. Stop at the booth. And I love to talk about HireVue, obviously, but always like to talk about other things and catch a concert here and there as well.
Well, that's a perfect segue. So I know in like all your profiles, you talk about being an indie music fan. What's favorite bands? Why do you like that stuff? Let's get into the personal side of Chip.
Well, it's simple. You hear me talking about new. I like new. You know, I'm listening to music all the time, and people say, "How can you do that and work?" I said, "Generally, because I don't know what I'm listening to. It's something new in the background, so it's there." You know, I was back in the order your records through the mail indie days back in the '80s. There's a great book called Our Band Could Be Your Life that when I read it, it is. I was an on-air DJ in college. I was the music director for the college station at Penn State. You know, I knew those folks. So, like Gerard Cosloy, who runs Matador Records now, ran Homestead Records back when I was in college, and just kind of that string. So, you know, music's just a passion, and live music is, you know, like I say, try to catch a band anywhere I can. So it's just that innovation, the creativity, the different. I don't like. If it's on the radio, I've probably gotten bored with it kind of thing. So maybe it's music ADD, you could call it. And then favorites, impossible. I mean, I got a couple 100,000 songs on my iTunes. And Spotify is even better because I could just hit random and you know, it goes. But The Cure is definitely one of them. Seen them several times. New Order is kind of probably one of the other ones that I've seen quite a bit and love. But punk's the other one. I've been listening to a lot of hardcore lately, which is Stress Release. And so I said, punk is an attitude, not an outfit. I'd go to punk hardcore shows when I was 16 with my polo shirt on. So,
right on. So last question. We got about a minute and 30 seconds left. So what's a suggestion to people to kind of do a set on the music they listen to? Because that's a hard thing for a lot of people. How do you just completely redefine the music you listen to? Any suggestions?
Well, I think that the awesome thing right now in the music industry is the bands are closer to the fans than they ever have been. You don't got all the middlemen, the A&R, the people pushing things on the radio, although I guess if you listen to the big radio stations, you do. But just that there are so many good blogs out there, and you know, I mentioned Spotify. You know, the great thing about that is you hear a band, you go, wow, that's kind of interesting. The whole catalog is right there, and you can listen to them, right? And you're helping them out, as I understand their model, if they get it worked out. Royalties are supposed to be going back to the bands. But I think the reset is again, you got to go out there and find something different. Get off the radio station, open up a blog, open up a magazine, and go find a different band.
And Twitter music.
Yeah.
Twitter Music is fantastic if you haven't checked it out.
Awesome. Two good suggestions. I'm kind of going through a little bit of a...
Follow me on Last FM. There you go, and you can find some good stuff.
Oh, there you go. Right on. Well, that and get my Pandora on, and I'm going to roll with Jesse. So Chip, thanks for coming on. As always, great conversation. Can't wait to see you guys around. Continued success for the crew over at Higher View. Lots of good folks over there. So
great. Thanks.
Okay. We're out of here, folks, with a little audio delay.